Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
I'm joined by K.A. Cobell, and she is out with her brand new book, Looking for Smoke. It's a YA thriller. It's available everywhere. And K.A., this book introduced me, well, it didn't introduce me to the term, but it was certainly the first novel I've read that was about the acronym MMIW. We hear a lot of acronyms in life, and here in the Midwest, this is a very important issue because there's a lot of tribal land around us. So can you explain what MMIW is?
Yeah. MMIW stands for Missing and Murdered Indigenous Women. And there is a prevalent problem in our country where Native women are the victims of violent crime far more often than any other group. So we have what we call the missing and murdered Indigenous women epidemic. And some of those statistics are that Native women are, their murder rate is 3 times more than that of white women, and in some locations it's 10 times the national average. So those numbers are huge, and 84% of Native women have experienced violence in some form, and 56% of them have experienced sexual violence. So it's just a real problem that not a lot of people are talking about.
Is it a problem that is limited to just tribal land, or is this all over the nation?
It's all over. We're seeing that in urban Native areas and on reservations.
When a crime occurs against an indigenous woman on a tribal location and tribal land, what is the jurisdiction or what's the investigative authority that's responsible for essentially either solving it or preventing it from happening in the first place?
Well, if it's on tribal land, there is a federal jurisdiction, but it does get complicated, which is something a lot of people bring up about the issue where there is a state, there's federal, there's the reservation has their own tribal police at times, so they have to be able to work together, and it does bring in a lot of issues sometimes.
The way you've told this story, it's four different viewpoints, and so when you write a fiction novel with four different viewpoints, you're having to change the outlook in your mind and jump into those characters' minds. So when you set about to do this, how did you pick the four viewpoints that you were going to use to tell your story?
Yeah, I knew from the beginning that I wanted to have multiple perspectives brought in, and I was inspired by a lot of other great thrillers who did that, and I knew that I wanted to have a few different views surrounding this one trauma of a classmate being murdered. So we have a new girl who is sort of looking into the tragedy as the readers are, giving us a view of trying to figure this out and trying to figure these characters out. And I have another character who I wanted to be very intimately connected to it. So we have a best friend, and we have someone who has a bit of a romantic history with her, and someone who really wished they had a romantic history with her. So it brought in a lot of variables and differences in how they were all reacting to this one trauma.
What I thought was interesting is a lot of times when you look at the perspective from the reader knows more than the characters. And so how limiting is it when you're writing from a character's perspective whose knowledge is not perfect because it's either skewed or it is they've been lied to and it's limited by some other way because they don't have that global outlook on it?
Yeah, that's what makes it fun. Writing from characters who know different things than each other, how that affects how they're interacting with each other, the secrets they have. So a lot of the characters in Looking for Smoke are keeping secrets. And it's really interesting as there are differing viewpoints of how someone is, we know the truth through their character, but what are they saying to these other characters? And it's really fun to play with that.
this is a fictional story that you've written, obviously, but as you're writing it, I would be willing to bet that it rings true with probably some realistic stories that have happened or some real stories that have happened. And so how careful did you have to be to not make this too aligned with maybe something that had happened, because somebody could get the wrong idea that you're talking about a specific case when, in fact, the one in the book happens to be made up and you're using it as an apocryphal story?
Yeah, I had to be so careful. And I knew from the very beginning that writing Looking for Smoke would be a bit like a tightrope walk, because I never wanted to take away from any of the real cases or sensationalize the real pain that some families and communities are currently dealing with. So I tried really hard to write Looking for Smoke with a lot of empathy and respect, and I really did it through my characters. I tried to make the characters feel really whole and realized, and to have their emotions shine through so that we would feel for the epidemic as these characters are feeling for it, and so that they would feel real on their own. And I did include an author's note that kind of helped differentiate between what's happening in this story and what's happening in the real world.
We see so many murders reported nationwide on the different national news networks and even local news networks, but MMIW cases just don't make the news. They're not, for whatever reason, they don't make the news. And even in Hollywood, we see CSI, the Law and Order shows. It never touches on these issues, it seems to me. And so how much do you think that plays into the fact that people are very unaware of what happens with Indigenous women?
Oh, it plays in a lot. Actually, 95% of these cases are never covered in national media. 95. So people just aren't hearing about it, and the cases aren't getting the attention they deserve. And that is one of my biggest hopes for Looking for Smoke, is that it will help bring in more eyes, to have more people talk about it and to go out and try to learn more about it.
I'm chatting with K.A. Cobell about her brand new novel, Looking for Smoke. It is available everywhere. K.A., there's a term now in sociology or in psychology called implicit bias. And do you think that's what plays into the media's role as far as not covering these? Because it seems like they're ripe for coverage. They're the same stories, that they just happen to different women.
Yeah, I'm sure it comes in, sadly. But I think we can all help, and we can. It starts with talking about it with ourselves. And if we do our best to start spreading the word and to try to make people look and to make people see that this really is happening, and we need to feel that.
You grew up as a member of the Blackfeet Nation. Can you explain what that was and how that influenced how you wrote this particular novel?
Yeah, so I am a member of the Blackfeet Nation, which is a tribe whose reservation is in northern Montana, right next to Glacier National Park, and that is where Looking for Smoke is set. And being a member of the Blackfeet tribe, it really inspired nearly everything in this story. I really wanted the setting and the characters to feel authentic. So I brought in a lot of childhood memories, family experiences, and teachings. I tried to show the culture, because being a member of this tribe, I have grown up with so much pride in that. And I really wanted to show that and to have people see what I've seen and how this culture is so beautiful and the community is so supportive and funny. And I really thought that Blackfeet deserved to see themselves in a story in popular media.
The state of Montana it's always been very rural, and sparsely populated. Now the population shift is such that a lot of people from the West, from California, are moving, and California are generally more left-wing than politically than Montana is. With the influx of people, do you think that's going to change the perspective of the way these cases are treated? Not necessarily with Blackfeet tribe, but with other tribes as the population shifts occur?
You know, I'm not sure. I really can't say, but I really hope that more people see. And I think we are seeing an increase because there are more stories coming to light. I think Lily Gladstone is doing a lot of great work bringing in more eyes with Swords of the Flower Moon and Fancy Dance. So I do think we are hopefully seeing a trend where more people are talking about it, and I hope that keeps going.
Your writing experience, this obviously isn't the first thing you've written, nonetheless it's your debut novel, and so did you workshop this book? How did the process of writing come to be for you?
I wrote this book actually about 3 years ago, and I take about 3 months to write it, and then I give it to some trusted first readers, and I get a little bit of feedback, and then I edited it. And then for this specific book, I entered a mentorship program where I had an author help me figure out ways that I could elevate the story even more. And then after that, I got a literary agent. That's the first big step towards becoming traditionally published. You need a literary agent who then will help you fix up your book even more, and they are the ones who send it out to different publishing editors. And once you have an editor who likes your book, they'll make an offer on it, and that's what happened with Looking for Smoke. And I was able to get a few offers, and one of them was from an imprint of HarperCollins called Heart Drum. And Heart Drum is a really special place for this book to be because it is an imprint that whole mission is to elevate Native voices. So they publish books from Native authors and other Indigenous authors who want to tell their stories.
Did you run into any blowback in the publishing world of, you know, this is an important issue, but people aren't going to necessarily read a fiction thriller about it, and because, you know, maybe a nonfiction book, but not necessarily a fiction book. Was there any type of that going on?
No, actually, there was a lot of excitement about this book. It got a lot of attention. It got a lot of offers, and I think that speaks to people want to know about it, and when they hear about it, I think they join in the thought of why isn't everyone else talking about it? So I was really lucky in that this story touched a lot of people even before it was to the publishing stage, and I really hope that continues as it comes out. It came out yesterday, and I hope that a lot of readers are touched by it and that they want to talk about it.
From a pure activism point of view, obviously talking about it is important, but that's not enough. And so where does the activism need to come in for people that are concerned about this? Is it Congress that controls the purse strings of the federal law enforcement authorities? Is it the local councils, tribal councils that control the purse strings of Indian land authorities? How does that work?
Well, I think for most people, the very first thing they can do is to find the organizations that are fighting for change and that are supporting the communities who are affected. So there are a lot of websites you can find all together on my author website, kacobell.com. I list out some organizations where you can go, you can learn what they're doing and how you can support them. and how you can donate to help the communities who might be lacking resources and the victims who need some support in their healing, or families who need support as they are dealing with a loss or looking for a family member.
All right. Well, it was just an amazing look at the history of missing and murdered Indigenous women, MMIW, and told through the lens of a thriller. The book is Looking for Smoke by K.A. Cobell. The book's available everywhere now. Check it out and do something more than reading it. Make it change your life. K.A., just a fantastic novel and very eye-opening for me, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. This is so fun.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskas. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.